This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back, everyone, to East Meets West here on the Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet podcast and feed. And I need to burp literally the second I press record, but we're powering through a mammoth month on New Japan Pro Wrestling content to cover. I am Scott McLeod, one of your hosts here on East Meets West. And joining me to talk about Destruction, Wrestle Dream, Royal Quest, and all the other stuff we've got coming up in November, because November won't slow down despite what we thought it might do. He's a Nigel McGuinness to my Kevin Kelly, for what I go by, Collision. He is Grant McRobbie. Hello, Grant.
It is a brilliant thing to be back. Destruction sums up some of the things. We've had some destruction emotionally. We've had some dreams and dream matches. Brian Danielson, stop dodging Nigel.
I know. Just give the man his match already, because Jesus, he's like a scorned ex-lover the way he talks with Daniel Bryan some weeks on Collision.
That's it. And if your answer is no, in the words of Christian Cage, go fuck yourself.
I get what you mean in terms of structure in some aspects. I mean, there's been some emotional damage this past month, and we'll get into all the details as we go through. And first off, I want to remind you all that Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat, you can find us on all good Android podcast sites, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean. Technically, you can't find us on Anchor and Spotify for podcast now, but I've gotten the habit of saying Anchor. Anyway, however you get a podcast, get it's the like, rating, or review on your chosen platform. See your back catalog, past episodes of East Meets West Central, the returning feature shows, and episodes of Saturday Draft Live every Saturday. Obviously, it's closed in the name. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, even TikTok, I think, if we've still got one. Say Twitter, not X. All at Suplex Retweet. But now, I got a lot written down here for what happened, so let's just dive straight into it, shall we? Destruction Tour took up all of September and the beginning part of October. The first few bits I'm going to mention feel like they happened 6 months ago. So much has happened, not just in Japan, but everywhere else in the world of wrestling. But we had some steady Road 2 shows. They didn't air all of the Road to Destruction shows that they did, which made it confusing given they had a bloody Best of Seven in them. Some of the shows that they did the Best of Seven on weren't even bloody aired. But on the ones that they did have, we kicked off very quickly with Zack Sabre Jr., as he'll be a common theme here throughout this episode, but he carrying the Techers for the tour with two back-to-back TV title defenses with two, I think it's fair to say, Grant, very varying opponents.
Yep, Zack has been the mega workhorse of this tour. The man is just an absolute unit. And yeah, as you say, two back-to-back nights, two completely different competitors, two completely different matches. And the man of Techers is always our favourite.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, we had his theme song in the intro, as you probably heard there, it's for a good reason, because his name's got to come up a few times. But yeah, it was meant to be him versus Bolt and Oleg, but then he got disqualified for illness. Like, I think he had an infection in his elbow. And to hear Chris Charlton describe it, is apparently he showed it to the judge, and I think I've got a bit of swelling here, and apparently it was like blown up to like double the size. So they're like, yeah, you're not wrestling tonight. And so, you know, after being apparently put on loan, what they call it, excursion, but it's very much he's on loan. Oyua came back from Noah alongside Kaito Kimiya, who's in his corner to take his place, had been hand selected to be in this spot. Clearly already shown some development from his brief time in Noah, because he did put in a decent effort against Zach, but there was also never any doubt, given he wasn't even the planned opponent. And then, while he's doing his back to the comments, he spots Satoshi Kojima trying to go for the shit, and he basically challenges him then and there, like, hey, do I fight me tomorrow?
Yeah, just, hey, Kojima, it's like I need to go to the bathroom. No, do you want a match? No, I really need to go for a shit. No, but you want a match? No, I want to go for a shit. Match, tomorrow, magic, banging.
I know. If you can tell me the best way to challenge them, a better way to challenge someone, then I'd see your line. But hey, I'm always happy to see him pop up. He's, you know, as a legend, he only pops up here and there. He pops up at WrestleDream in a random multi-person tag with some people I also forgot were employed. But, you know, always happy to see him again. The result was never in doubt, but I just wanted to see him keep it going. I thought, like, I want every time he finishes one match, he challenges someone else to win, and to see how many wins he can fix throughout the tour.
I love that idea. I just love the fact of him just, like, the promos they could do of just random places that he encounters people, like, in the pub. Mm-hmm. It's like, oi, mm-hmm. Taichi, old friend. Match? Magic. See you tomorrow. It's proper night. Alan Partridge vibes. Alan!
When he finds the toilet, he's standing at the urinal, he just challenges whoever's standing next to him. Like, oh, alright, I fancy a match.
Dickhead.
So it was nice to see him versus Kojima. Two, like I said, very different matches. Then we also had a randomly put together six-man tag title defense with, I keep putting in Chaos, because even though Tanahashi is in Chaos, it's pretty much by association. So it's easier just to write that down rather than writing all three names. But yeah, Okada, Ishii, and Tanahashi defended their title successfully against Tiger Mask, Tenzan, and Makabe. And it was a weird choice to that. And they kept emphasizing all three men's accomplishments, the combined years of experience, the combined tournaments and championships have all won. So it felt like just a case of like, one of the ones like, they might not be around for much longer. Give them one last little bit to, you know, give them their dues.
That's it. Just, you know, let's remind people that these tag belts exist, because, you know, we have so many belts. It's not like we have any time to show them all. Not like we do like 300 shows in the tour, which half don't get televised. No, yeah. Not at all.
I mean, I probably have to watch some of the shows that they do televise, so I'm glad that they don't televise all of them. There was a match that main evented the third. They did three in a row to start off the tour. I think it was on the right beginning of September. And then they didn't televise anymore until the 17th. So there was a match that started a running thing throughout the tour on the last show. I'm going to come back to it because it culminates at Rigoku, and I'm going to talk about it as a whole thing. And I'm talking about the Best of Seven series. We'll come back to that later. But yeah, the main thing was just previewing matches that we're going to get either at Destruction in Kobe, which is in the middle of September on the 24th, or at Rigoku on the 9th of October. Big theme of it was basically highlighting the different factions that were going at it, including House of Torture versus just Five Guys, that ongoing war. And we might as well get right into it here at Kobe. So the first of the special matches that came up was the KOPW Division of Championship defense. And I've just put in my notes here, Kanemaru is a bastard.
I'm still fucking raging about that. I was so happy with just Five Guys to set up. Kanemaru was a great little foil in there. And then he betrays them. For what? The fucking House of Torture.
It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And again, it's kind of like when Evil initially turned and joined Bullet Club. Like, he's called Evil. We shouldn't be surprised when he goes bad properly. And like, Kanemaru's nickname is the Heel Master, so we can't really surprise when the Heel Master turns heel. But I agree with you, you know, we had a good setup. Him and Doki were seemingly turning into a really solid junior tag team. And, you know, you had Taichi and Sanada holding belts, you had Taka as the mouthpiece. It was really a solid setup. And people talk about Sho throwing things away. I feel like this is more of a waste than when Sho joined. Like, Kanemaru, like, what are you joining for? As you said, like, you're throwing all this potential away.
Yeah, because let me look at my notes. We have the stellar careers within there of Sho and Yujiro Takahashi. Yeah, he's doing really well for himself.
I know. He's probably at least a good 10, 15 years younger than Dick Togo, yet somehow Dick Togo moves quicker than Yujiro does. I don't know how that's possible. And maybe he's a pimp, maybe he's shagged out, who knows. But honestly, every time I look at Yujiro now, I think you're more and more of a waste of space.
That's it's not even like he's a good shagger. It's not like it's House of Shaggers, it's House of Torture. Pish. Absolute pish.
I know. And the match itself was, of all the title matches on this tour, this was certainly one of them, because there was the two stipulations, as usual in a KOPW match, and you had Joe trying to give his stipulation. As soon as you read his stipulations out, you're like, yeah, that's never going to get picked. You're just trying to troll us, aren't you? Whereas, like, 10-minute time limit, Joe can make more rules up as he goes along. If it goes to the time limit, Joe wins the title. And Reggie's one was basically everyone gets handcuffed to a member of the opposing faction. So he had Sanada handcuffed to Evil, and other members of Justify gets handcuffed to the other members of House of Torture. Again, how do they think this was going to work? I mean, they say it again when they do the Lumberjack match later in the month, like, having the House of Torture there is not going to nullify them just because you also have the face faction here. They're still going to do things. We might really thought we'd ban them from the fucking building.
That's it. And you have to properly ban them from the building, because otherwise Dick Togo plays with the light switches.
Mm-hmm. I know. I do love like the running narratives about the shit that Dick Togo's up to, that Kevin Kelly keeps making out, like claiming that he's been selling fake tickets to the Tokyo Dome, or he's trying to start his own false travel agency, which rips people off, called Dick to Go. More entertaining actually watching Dick Togo wrestle. So yeah, it was a weird, convoluted mess, and it finally looked like Kanemaru was going to come back, because that's something we should mention. On one of the multi-man tag matches during the road to these, it looks like just five guys are going to run in and get back at Evil and Joe for stealing the two KOPW belt, for stealing like their belts and everything, because you know that's a classic thing. All the heels stealing the belt to challenge the face, and usually the heel loses, but weirdly Joe has bucked that trend. But okay, we're going to go, we're going to get them. And immediately, Buddy Kanemaru collapses, and that really was off-putting. Like, is this real? Did he actually get fucked up there? And then as soon as Doki came out and the House of Torture tried to jump them, like, ah, well, this is clearly some sort of angle. And then when he took that all that in consideration, when he came back miraculously and then turned on them immediately, like, ah, I guess we kind of should have seen this coming.
That's it. We should have seen that absolute bastard. You're a bastard, yeah. Kanemaru. A bastard-coated bastard with a bastard filling.
Yes. He spit the whiskey in Tai Chi's face. House of Torture, you know, got the number of his edge now, because they had now five and just five guys, now just four guys again temporarily. And they're wondering, Kevin Kelly went, well, those collector's items, just four guys shirts, may not be collector's items anymore, because we're going to need some more just four guys shirts. And then Sanada had been trying to get Evil to accept a challenge for the 9th of October and a lumberjack match for the day, because he thought, well, we've kind of got the numbers advantage. Actually, we're five, you're four. It should actually nullify the House of Torture for good. And Evil had been like, no, don't want to do that. And as soon as Show won and the rest of the Just Five guys got beat down, Evil was like, you know what? All of a sudden, that the lumberjack match doesn't seem like a bad idea anymore.
I mean, it's like, people have had worse ideas, like, Mr. Should we give Enzo a belt for a year, or give the House of Torture every belt for a short period of time?
Hey, it was a hypothetical. I said, what would you rather?
But they must have fucking listened.
They might speak into existence. Thankfully, for now, only one of them has got a belt. Evil was only pretending to carry around that belt, and thankfully Sanada got it back, which I hope they would. So, for now, as long as you keep it to show, and honestly, it's a shame to see the KOPW go down the drain after everything Tai Chi and Shingo tried to do for it, but if there was any belt that had to go back to being a joke or forgotten about, the KOPW isn't as bad as things go.
It is slowly but surely becoming New Japan's answer to the 24/7 title.
Pretty much. I mean, my own hope for Kanemaru here is that, you know, he was already kind of, he used shenanigans every so often, you know, using the whiskey bottle and everything, so it does feel like a heel weapon. I just hope his in-ring style doesn't fall down a cliff the way Show's does, because Show completely changed everything about himself in terms of the way he wrestles, and that's one of the things that made his matches less enjoyable. You know, I hope Kanemaru at least tries every so often, which is more than can be said for the rest of the group.
That's it. There's definitely... I still think there's a chance for Sho. Just see the light. Come back to us. Come on, son. We still love you. Come back.
I think I look at Sho and Kanemaru like a disappointed parent, like, I wanted more from you boys, but you had to hang around with those wrongins.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Bitterly, bitterly disappointed. And this was like the halfway point of the show. It put me in a bad mood for the next couple of matches when I was watching it, if I'm completely honest. And then bloody for the third time in the space of a year, even that, like probably like 8 or so months, DMDK, Mikey Nichols and Shane Hayes lost in an attempt to get the bloody IWGP heavyweight tag titles. And that kind of made me feel even worse. And then Shingo Takagi was going to fight Buddy Great Okan, which made me think, who do I side for here? Either way, I'm going to be sad. So why is this show attempted to make me so sad?
Why must we endure this heartache and pain? When we show nothing but love, why must they do this?
Yeah, I think we can only hope for the for TMDK to get the strong belts at this point, because I think Gary has made it very clear, oh, you can challenge for him, but I'm giving you Aussie boys the IWGP heavyweight tag belts. I gave it to a couple of Aussies before, and then they buggered off to Tony Khan's company. So clearly Gedo has been hurt by this, and I think with Tag League coming up and everything, and no seemingly planned title defences in the future, I think Bishamon have pretty much a lock in it, hold it to Wrestle Kingdom or possibly beyond.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm trying to think really with New Japan, what tag teams are viable to go over Bishamon at the moment. And really, no team feels built up enough to take the big belts. Plenty of people in the running for going for the strong ones, because they just seem to get passed around like a hot potato. But the big ones, maybe like LIG or something like that in the future, or maybe a different United Empire group. But right now, Bishamon's got them in a death grip.
Yeah, there's definitely combinations you can do. Like, I think that I still maintain the possibility of a Shingo Tsuji tag team going through World Tag League is very interesting, given any combination of the United Empire, the actual run in the World Tag League, and we're running with the tag team titles would be better than what they got last time they got to hold the belts. It's like, you've seen that clip of Shingo and Tsuji when they did that tag finisher, the spear combined with the pumping bomber. I mean, that's a proper tag finisher, that one.
Oh, it's absolutely stunning. It actually looks like it's killing someone.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even have the War Dogs down for a potential dark horse pick for winning the World Tag League had they not just lost the strong belts. So, or maybe that was the case that they were setting them up to get another shot at Bishamon. They lost to them before, but honestly, I don't know. We're going to have to wait a month to see who they actually get together for this World Tag League tournament. But as I said, Bishamon retained. We then had a couple of the last three matches. The theme here was LIG versus United Empire. We had Shingo versus Great Okan for reasons, I think. It was okay. Like, I've seen better matches between these two, but it just made me think, when are they going to, you know, give Great Okan the rub? When are they going to give him the proper run here as a singles guy? Because they seem to be going off this thing like, oh yeah, that loss in the UK to Michael Goku, it's shattered the Great Okan's confidence, and now he keeps losing all the time.
That's it. We need the Great Okan to be back in his winning ways. All hail. Because it's just terrible what is going on there right now. It's like, what does Gedo have against the Great Okan? The man goes for testicle massages after all.
I mean, I think the beard makes him look a bit older, but I think he's still fairly young. So it's also still time, but it just feels like he's been around because he's been such a big part of the programming ever since he came back from his excursion when he joined the United Empire and its founded moments. You know, it feels like he'd been around for ages by this point and feels like he's had so many opportunities but never quite been able to get that one moment to become a single proper single standout moment, you know. But we can only hope. Yeah, a match that I think was not meant to be for the title shot, but then I think kind of was made for the title shot, where we had Naito with his makeshift burlap bag, which has the writing on it that says IWGP title shot at the Tokyo Dome, successfully retaining it over Jeff Cobb. I mean, you knew the result was never in doubt, but it was fun to watch Jeff Cobb and Nigel go at it again.
Yeah, two of them, the chemistry for them is undeniable. Cobb is an absolute beast. It really is. And Nigel just works so well against him, and all his kind of mannerisms, his chemistry, it's just a brilliant match every time the two of them go at it.
Mm-hmm. If I'm talking about chemistry, I mean, it was a great match, but I think this is a match that got lost in a month, and yeah, another month of Ospreay bangers, because, you know, he was cut off the stuff at Wembley, and then he would go on to do stuff at Royal Quest and appearing at Wrestle Dream. And amongst all that was Tsuji getting a proper showcase again, you know, after first proper showcase in a main event since his match with Sanada in the main event of Dominion. For Tsuji, he did lose his title shot to Will Ospreay for the UK title, but what a match. And I think weirdly, I don't know what it is they're doing with Narita and Shota. We'll get back to them in a minute, but Tsuji seems, and in such a short amount of time, he seems a lot more primed for breakout success than the other two musketeers.
Yeah, Tsuji is on a tear at the moment, and to be honest, when you're putting someone up against Ospreay, has Ospreay even had a bad match in the last 3 months? I think not. But yeah, Tsuji is looking the star of the three musketeers, and has that very convincing body double in his twin brother when he wants to pull off shenanigans like the Bellas.
Yeah, I agree with your point about Ospreay and everything. Like, actually, spoiler, wasn't a fan of his match at Wrestle Dream, but I don't blame him for that. I blame other people in that match. But yeah, Tsuji, like, has hit the ground running as part of his LIJ, you know, went into a world title match. Maybe he's not interacted with the other musketeers, he's kind of doing his own thing within the faction. But I definitely think within a year he'll have some sort of championship gold within the year, if even less than that. Whereas I think they're trying to do a thing with Narita and Sho where they're like, oh, we're sometimes tie partners, but also sometimes rivals. So maybe they're trying to link those two together a little bit more. So maybe a potential rivalry that goes on for the years, like an Okada Tanahashi style thing. Whereas I think, like, no, Tsuji's better off doing his own thing.
Yeah, that's it. I think Tsuji suits the LIJ style. He works well with that kind of unique charisma that comes from LIJ members. Well, maybe not Bushi. He's not really got much charisma these days, just really cool masks. But there is that kind of... Shota, I think, they had high hopes for because of the whole Moxley connection, but I don't feel they've capitalised on him right. And Narita, well, the less said, the better.
I know, Jesus, what happened to you, boy? Like, you had everything when you first came, and you were in that match as actually with Junior at the Tokyo Dome, and now the other two, they're fucking lapping you, son.
That's it. Getting scalped, sent to bed without supper.
Oh. But talking about, you know, young guys coming back from excursion, let's talk about the October 9th show and Ryogoku. It was a B-show match. I had some guys from outside of Japan coming in to fight a New Japan. It was a pre-show match which had some guys from outside of Japan, some other promotions, coming in to fight a team of like New Japan stars. But I turned that match off halfway through it because the fucking audio went off and it made Kevin Kelly sound like a robot. So I had to skip to the main show. And so they were going to, right off the bat, show you that, by the way, we're not going to be called just four guys. We're going to keep the just five guys' name because we have a fifth member. And we're going to keep it a lumberjack match. We're going to finally counteract the numbers of the House of Torture. We thought, oh, who's this new member of Just Five Guys going to be? Ladies and gentlemen, can I get a Joe? Yeah.
Oh, I'm still upset that Joe Ya is over, but Yuya Yamura coming in to join Just Five Guys. A handsome replacement.
A very fitting replacement. Heatstorm. Yuya Yamura, we should have mentioned, because it came up Heatstorm for what felt like a far longer than it needed to. It's allowed Kevin Kelly to take the piss out of NXT, saying it sounded like an NXT-generated name, which is not too far off, actually. It sounds like the kind of film, sounds like the name of a kind of parody film they'd mentioned in bloody Tropic Thunder. But yeah, Yuya Yamura, after being fired from Impact and KFA because he got the fired briefcase and the feaster fired, it seemed like we could tell was setting up his return to Japan because I couldn't think of anyone else it would be. And, you know, I kind of felt like I'd been saying multiple times on this show, Yuya's been on excursion for ages. When is Yuya going to come back to Japan and, you know, get his push alongside the Musketeers? and, you know, say his name enough times and he'll appear, as he helped get the win for his team against the House of Torture, and, you know, used what's been called the deadbolt suplex, which looks very similar to the suplex that Narita was using when he came back.
But with a different name and slightly better.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely better. For some reason, after that, they decided to give us a bloody singles match between Chase Owens and Tangaloa, but thankfully, in around 8 minutes, Tangaloa quickly dealt with him. I didn't even watch the fact how they did a arm wrestling contest between the two on a Road 2 show. I made sure to stay well clear of that.
I was like, nope, not wasting my time with that.
On this card, there were 10 matches on this main card. And from the fourth match onwards, it was match that had stakes, and they built and built and built. And the fourth match was the second defense of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles for the War Dog representing team of Driller Mullen and Clark Connors against Kevin Knight and Kushida. And it's been that long, and the titles had that moment where they're being briefly swapped back and forth. I forgot that Jet Setters lost them back to Catch 2-2 before Catch 2-2 lost them to the Bullet Club. So for some reason, I thought this was we're doing this rematch of these two teams. No, they didn't actually do this match before. It was Catch 2-2 who lost to Bullet Club. They've never done this match before.
Yep. Showing just how well they have built the IWGP Junior Tag Belts in the last year. We completely forgot who had them.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help that during their time as tag team champions, they only had one defense, they lost it. And then, and between that, Kushida got absolutely fucking made a fool of during the Super Junior tournament. So they didn't exactly build them up as tag team champions, but it was a much better match. I mean, I knew about this match before I'd even seen it, because I waited for the live version then before I watched it. And I'd already somehow seen that gif of Kushida's soul leaving his body when he got caught in that pile driver by Bloody Maloney.
Oh yeah, that was horrible. That was like, I do believe someone has just been murdered before my eyes. I do declare
indeed. I mean, there's a hell of an effort between the two, but I don't think anybody thought that the War Dogs were going to lose. I do think heading into Super Junior Tag League, they've done a good job of presenting these two as a great, like it's a lot more bruiser style juniors than the typical flippy or technical juniors. They're just hard hitting. And basically, he's like, all these tag teams want to step up to them, and most of them are probably going to get battered by the champions.
Yeah, it's been different that way, because, like, for years, New Japan's junior division was defined by the likes of your Ospreys and your Ricochets and Kenny Omegas, Fergal Devitts, bouncing about the place like madmen, but there is a definite change in the style coming on.
Yeah. And you talk about Fergal Devitts, he was one of the few IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champions to go through undefeated and win the Super Junior tournament. And on this show and at Royal Quest, Chris Charlton was really making a heavy argument for these guys running through World Tag League, Super Junior Tag League, sorry, and choosing their opponents, which I think would be the first time that the champions had won Super Junior Tag League since Roppongi 3K did it in their first try. So it would be an interesting option to see them and just run through the tournament. And I really like the offense that they've got. It's quite unique. Like, so that where Maloney launches the guy in the air so that Clark Connors can hit him with the Jeep flip, or their very unique spear or suplex combo that they do.
Yeah, there is something, it's quite special, and I'll be honest, I mean, I've seen Dan Maloney a lot when he was in the UK, and it wasn't bad, but there was just always something missing that was stopping him from being that next level, and I think he's found it in New Japan, in Bullet Club, and especially with teaming with Connors, he's got that, the last bit of the puzzle has clicked, and I think in the long run for him, it could lead to an eventual singles run as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, I think so as well. So, this next match, the Best of Seven series, the finale of the Best of Seven, which was the team of Yuji Nagata, Shota Umino, and Master Wato against Manoa Suzuki, Ren Narita, and El Desperado. Now, going into this, the first match they did was, I believe, the 10th of September, ending the one of their Blue Justice events. They went to a 30-minute time limit draw, which I don't think they needed to. It was a good 15 or so minute match. It got stretched over 30. Then the strong third team started dominating before the other team pulled it back. But then they said coming in, it was because of the draw, strong style was already one up. So there was no way that the Nagata team could win. They could only hope to draw, which they did, because Shota Umino got a win with the Death Rider in this match. Because I think it was a case that during the tournament they said that, I think they said that during the series, Venom had gotten the win for his team at one point by pinning Shota Umino, which he'd never done up until that point. And then in the first two matches, they've been like, oh, these two didn't factor in the first couple of matches because they were just so concerned of tearing each other apart. But in this match, Shota pins Narita again with the Death Rider. So we had a best of seven series that leads to a draw, and then teases the possibility that at some point Shota and Renu are going to be a tag team at some point because the teams are at Royal Quest. So I put my notes and I ask you, Grant, what the fuck was the point of this?
You know what? The point was, it's not about the journey. It's not about how it ends, but it's all about the friends that we make along the way.
How all of a sudden Otto and Desperado have somewhat become friends, whereas, you know, some actual consistency was kept with Nagata and Nagata and Suzuki were like, I'm not shaking your fucking hand, I still hate you.
Yeah, it's just, I'll be honest, it is absolutely fucking ridiculous. Like, what was the last time we had like a best of seven series? Was that when we ended up getting bloody Sheamus and Cesaro together?
The last time I can think of, I think the only other one other than that I can think of recently was the Death Triangle, the Elite, the Trios title one, AEW.
They didn't even tell us
that was the best series until after the first match.
Yeah, and by the end of it, it's like, best of sevens are so hard to pull off because at some point it's just too much too soon.
Mm-hmm. I know. It depends on the story you tell and the series, because, like, for example, that Elite one, the story of that was, Death Triangle won 3 matches in a row, but they kept cheating. So we kept having stipulations where they couldn't cheat because weapons were legal, and the Elite won all 4 of those. So it basically proves that Death Triangle can't beat the Elite without cheating, because the Elite are just that class. It's almost like their name is in the fucking company.
So, you know, it's like they almost maybe had something to do with starting the company, maybe to do with booking the company, maybe to do with a little bit of bumping with Tony Khan in the lines.
Something along those lines, maybe. But from the match that I really, again, couldn't give a shit about and wonder why I wasted my time with it, to a pleasant surprise, but while only in their first defence, War Dogs, Alex Cogg, and Gabe Kidd lost their strong openweight tag team titles to the team of El Fantasma and Hikaleo. And I moved, and I went so monumental that Kevin Kelly forgot that El Fantasma had been junior heavyweight tag team champion, because he asked Chris Charlton, is this ELP's first bit of gold in New Japan? Which technically it is as a heavyweight, but not his first bit of gold overall. And I thought this was a lot of fun. I love that moment of Alex Coughlin realizing he was fucked before he got the sudden death and then the choke slam. And then what they call the Super Thunder Kiss 86 with the assisted frog splash. Because, you know, you have to have that when you've got a high flyer and a big guy. And you know what? Good for ELP and Hikaleo. They deserve it.
That's it. The two of them have been doing, like, ELP has been producing match after match for a long time in New Japan. He never quite got a run on as a singles junior guy, so he's moved up to the heavyweights. Hikaleo's starting to really find his stride as a big guy. Two of them deserve this. I could not be happier with that. Yeah, maybe a bit of a shame for the War Dogs, because, you know, Gabe Kidd and that have only just got the belts, but the fans are behind ELP and Hikaleo. Everyone's so behind them. Good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they had a wee little remix of the theme song, like, where he did these, like, thumbs, instead of the ELP, it was G-O-D, which is good. But by the time they get to the ring, you realise that's the only thing the song does, and it's the same chord you were like, you could be a little less repetitive, ELP. Like, put some fucking effort into your music, pal.
It's like, give us a little bit of something new.
I say as a guy who knows nothing about producing music. So I'll sit here and from my comfortable armchair and just tell you how I think you should do things.
Oh, definitely. Oh, what a team. What a team. Just give them better music.
What a team. Oh, yeah. Well, that team, ladies and gentlemen. But it was a good night for GOD, as we'll talk about in a little bit. But we had to talk about another bit of open weight belts, but it's the six-man belts, where it was a very unique matchup. And I remember getting very excited when I saw it. And apparently it was at the request of Tanahashi, where he, Okada, and Ishii defend the belts against the Impact representing team of Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, and Josh Alexander. You had the two of the top singles champions in Impact Wrestling with the X Division and World Heavyweight Champion, and you got bloody Alexander, who's the number one contender for Shelley's World Heavyweight title, which is happening this Saturday, the same day that Super Junior Tag League starts, this Saturday at Bound for Glory. So, interesting. And then also they hyped up like, oh, you know, you've got two guys who are going to fight each other in a week or so's time, so how's that going to come into it? And then they do have that moment where, oh no, the two guys who are going to fight who are now teaming bumped into each other. What does this mean?
What could ever happen here? Have we ever seen this before? No, it's totally new.
I did like that they had the Impact team kind of dominate for a little bit, but then after that, it was the more experienced trio that kind of took over their third successful defense for the Okada-led team. But what I thought was the most unique thing about this, you know, after the high fly flow, Tanahashi pinned Shelley, getting his kind of win back from Multiverse United, which teases that maybe Shelley will retain the title at Bound for Glory and maybe set up one more match with Tanahashi.
Not the worst idea in the world. Definitely would not complain at that.
Oh, fuck it. Keep the belt on Shelley throughout the end of the year. Let him come into the Tokyo Dome and defend it, because I saw a lot of people going into last year's Wrestle Kingdom complaining that Tanahashi wasn't in a singles match at Wrestle Kingdom, you know, the biggest show of the year, so make up for that by giving him this shot.
No, I would be totally behind that, and, you know, or if they want to come to Glasgow and do it when we go to Impact, totally behind that.
Oh yeah, so week on Thursday we're going to be there for the Impact UK Invasion Tour. It kicks off on the 26th in Glasgow. We're going to be there, Ross is going to be there, I think a couple of people from ESR might be there, so I'm very much looking forward to it and get to see what happens there. Mainly to join in Joe's entrance, which I like saying his name and clapping along. God, if I could have been in there in person for the Joya entrance, it would have been 10 times better.
That's it, but at least we will be there in person. Gary is meant to be going as well. David Campbell's a shite bag and didn't go.
Tut.
You'd have thought, hey, he doesn't show up to things, doesn't show up here. You've got your invite, David. Why aren't you here? We keep calling, you don't answer.
Dear David, I wrote to you, but you still ain't calling. But then we had some more GOD success as Tama Tonga finally took back the never open weight belt from David Friendly, despite David Friendly trying to attack him in the opening match, like sneaking up behind him and attacking him with the belt. Tama Tonga managed to get revenge for what happened back at Wrestling Dontaku and win his third never open weight heavyweight championship with what is usually known as a J-Driller, which I think apparently they said he's calling the DSD. I was, again, surprised to hear. I mean, under Finlay, you know, the War Dogs have been quite dominant in the first few months of their time, but the exception of the Maloney-Connors win, I think it's a case of like, okay, GOD are finally getting some momentum and this is them kind of finally getting back at the War Dogs.
Yeah, this, like, it feels like the War Dogs have cooled off massively very fast. Where do they go from here? I do not know, because honestly I don't see the point in Finlay going back in the never title race. It's been back and forth for too long, but he needs to do something to get relevant again.
Anyway, he does say he wants another shot at Tammy. He told Tammy in his Betsy Collins when he was freaking out trying to go for, you know, he's trying to take Zack Sabre Jr. spot for the backstage freakouts, where he's trying to say, like, ah, I'll give you one more shot, you know. You name the time, you name the place. So I assume maybe they'll wait till Wrestle Kingdom to do one more match, but yeah, maybe he should move up maybe towards the UK title or towards heavyweight contention. If they really want to take him seriously, like the leader of the Bullet Club, because there was a six-man tag at Royal Quest, not to jump too far ahead, but it was like Finlay, Coughlin and Kidd against Tangaloa, ELP and Tama Tonga. And not only did David finally take the pin, he was pinned by Tangaloa, the worst option of the three to pin you.
That's it. Like, No one gets pinned by Tangela. Not even Tangela gets pinned by Tangela.
I know. You reserve getting pinned by Tangela for lower level people, you know, like Chase Owens.
God, that name. Goddamn Chase Owens.
Let's move on to something more pleasant than Chase Owens. Because we were worried about the show going into it, because we had heard there was talk of, you know, a flu going around the New Japan locker room, taking a whole bunch of people out, but most of them managed to actually make it to the show. With the exception of Leo Rush, who didn't manage to make it, but his tag team partner, or his former tag team partner, Yo, took his place after pinning Hiromu in a multi-man tag match on one of the Road 2 shows. So it's now a triple threat of Hiromu, Yo, and Mike Bailey, who's also got a big match coming up, apparently, against Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay did a really nice video where he was ironing his clothes while with that match on in the background. And his main takeaway was like, oh, I'm just watching Mike Bailey fail to win the belt that I won 3 times.
To absolutely rub it in.
I know, so Will Ospreay bangers in the month of October is not done yet. He's still got that match with Mike Bailey, which we were robbed of at Multiverse United back at WrestleMania weekend, but I'll be very much looking forward to seeing that match at Bound for Glory. And I think because Mike Bailey's got that match coming, or maybe because they want to save the one-on-one match they were supposed to get between him and Hiromu at a later date, it was Joe that took the pin, but really fast-paced 17 minutes 53 seconds here with the time bomb too that he took. So despite Yo being the last minute addition and taking the pin, he gave you a few moments where it looked like he might get the upset win.
Yeah, that was a well made match for the fact that was a last minute change to things. Yo kind of obviously came back from all that time off, the split with Show and everything, and it's probably the closest it looks like he's kind of found to finding his way back in a long time. So he looked good despite losing. He did come out of it looking better than he did before coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a long time since he won any gold, really, you know, but when you actually look at it, I know Show's the, you know, KOPW champion, but really I think for the fact that he's changed his style slightly, but for the better, as you know, compared to the way Show's fucking completely altered his style. And he's in these absolute bangers. He won the Super Junior Tag League. I think a lot of people would have pegged Show to win the tag team breakup, if you will. But Yo's looking more like the winner in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there.
Plus, we got a hint of an angry, you know, Mike Bailey. The veil of niceness slipped briefly because he was angry because he lost but didn't get pinned. So keeping that door open for later on. But the door to... Well, a weird segue. The door to evil potentially becoming IWGP Heavyweight Champion thankfully swung very harshly back in his face as he failed to capture the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship in a match that, I'm shocked when I look at here, apparently took 28 minutes.
What? Did it?
I mean, I'm sure there were points where it felt like eternity, but I didn't think it actually lasted that long.
My God, that's horrific.
I know. And of course, House of Torture are going to do what they do, but I did feel like for a moment that just my guys had turned around before the shenanigans started again, because there was a moment where Sonata pretty much takes it all of House of Torture on his own before Evil tries to run away with the belt up through the crowd, and all of just five guys go and chase him and drag him back.
That's like, I mean, there's a reason it got such the high star rating that it did, of course.
Oh, yeah. Those who didn't see it, Dave Meltzer rated it 1.5 stars, which for the world title, the top prize in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which used to be Dave's favourite promotion of all time, and people say, oh, it was in the Tokyo Dome, it was in Japan, he gets 6 stars. Well, not if you put Evil in it. It doesn't. Because it was a weird match. You know, you had that moment where the House of Torture held Sonata up on his head and then so Dick Tucker could punch him in the balls. But eventually, you know, everyone, just five guys, got their moment. Yu Mir looked really good helping to fend off the House of Torture. And eventually, with the deadfall, Sonata made what is apparently his fourth successful defense with the belt. He said he didn't go after Evil and take the belt back when he stole it, because he wasn't like, I let my belt get stolen from me, I got to earn it to get it back.
Good guy, Sonata.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'll be honest with you, Chris Charlton's getting right on my fucking tits at the minute. Because, my God, I mean, there are some scenarios, I'll admit, that they booked an ad in which don't always make him look like the guy here, and he's for his first title reign. But God, he can't fucking win when it comes to Chris Charlton, can he?
No, doesn't matter what he does. Age. What? Smoking a pancake? Sugar in the waffle? Bong in the blinch? No? Then there is no pleasing you.
Because, oh, who is he actually beating? Like, well, he's beating who they fucking put him in the ring with, the people who challenged him, he got in the ring with. So it'd be weird if he didn't accept the challenges that he took. You know, he went undefeated in his block. He lost to Evil because of shenanigans, but now he's avenged that loss. Went, oh, so fucking Chris Charlton was calling this match the referendum on Sonata as champion. Like, he won, but not by a landslide or anything. And then there was all the talk about, oh, but do people actually want Naito to win? Like, I'm sure Naito has his fans. It's very popular, but a lot of people have been waiting for Sonata to get his shot. So, yeah, it'll be very divisive, but I don't think the Naito cheers are an insult to Sonata champion. It's the fact that we have two very popular guys going into the main event at the Tokyo Dome.
That's it. And even it's like saying, like, who's he beating, stuff like that. Well, who did he fucking beat to get the belt, Chris? Who? Okada. That's who.
Yeah. And on the way there in the New Japan Cup, who did he beat? Naito in the quarterfinals.
So just simmer down, Chris, you wee gobshite.
No, it's not his fault that Tony Khan was so lazy he put fucking Jack Perry, who hasn't been seen since Wembley, wonder why, rather than some actual opponent. And now he's even got fucking Will Ospreay slagging him off, because he's like, aren't you, if you're a world champion, aren't you supposed to defend it around the world? Because it looks like Sonata's pretty much done now. He's just going to be in tag matches going forward.
Well, yeah, the only way to fix that, Gedo. Book is another little title match in somewhere.
I know. Maybe let him go around and defend the belt. Maybe let him defend the belt when he goes to emergence and not have him come out like, oh, I'm the champion. Where's your belt? Oh, a guy called Evil nicked it.
Absolute shocking.
Mm-hmm. And I am deeply concerned about this upcoming feud with Naito heading into the Tokyo Dome. I fear for your boy.
I'm worried as well. And the amount of people I know, it's like, I think Sarah's man Dan is talking about going to the Dome to support his boy. And I went, if it's no Sonata, don't come back.
Well, I never thought I'd say this statement, but I agree with Gideon Gray. Because it was Gideon Gray and Chris Charlton doing the commentary for Royal Quest, which turned out better than I thought it might. And, you know, Charlton was making the same points about Sonata as champion and about people maybe wanting to hear the roll call at the end of the Tokyo Dome rather than hearing Sonata speak at the end of the Dome. And he made the point, like, Chris, what more does he have to do to show you that he is the guy, he is the top guy in New Japan? And I agree with him, because he went undefeated in his block. He had all these young guys stepping up to him and he beat them all. He sent him across to fight who they think is a pillar of AEW. Even though he's probably not worthy of that title, he beat him. He beat the best junior heavyweight they've got right now. He beat one of the guys who they're clearly going to build the future around with Yota Tsuji, and he beat his former tag team partner. Now we've got to go on to fight his former stablemate. What more can he do, Chris Charlton?
Does he have to fight God himself? Do we have to find a way to resurrect fucking half the dead legends and have him fight them too?
Like aspects of this feud between him and Naito, you know, to look forward to. There was the whole thing of their history in LAJ, the fact they were briefly tag team champions, if you remember, back in 2021, and like when Sonata first debuted in New Japan as part of LAJ, what did he do? He helped Naito win the title. And also the thing that Kevin Kelly, I think, brought up, or maybe him or Charlton, but on the brawl, like, you know, Keiji Muto was ringside during the match with Evil. Keiji Muto was a hero, an idol, a guy who Sonata studied under, but who retired Keiji Muto in the Tokyo Dome. It was Tetsuya Naito.
That's it. The stakes are there. Everything, all the little breadcrumbs are there for the story. So, you know, go with it.
Yeah, both men looking to finish their story. Sonata looking to finally cement himself in the Tokyo Dome as the guy and hopefully shut some people up. Naito looking for one last chance to do his big LIG roll call in the main event of the Dome.
Roll on the Dome.
Roll on the Dome, indeed. I got very mad at Naito because I'm very much rooting for Sanada at this point. When, you know, fucking the quote Jay for the in between, so there was the one point where I looked at Sanada after Naito was avoiding him and sending him to the outside and everything. I'm like, he's made you look a rotten knob. And then post match, he sees him like shaking his hand, and fucking Bushi spits mist in his face.
Of course, the mist.
And that one, like, no, fuck you, Naito. Fuck LIJ, except for Shingo and Tsuji. Those two are cool. The rest of you can go fuck yourselves. Even Titan, especially Titan, but mostly Bushi.
But mostly Bushi.
Ah. We'll go take a little trip over to Seattle, because I hear it's nice this time of year. Because we had a show called Wrestle Dream, which had some New Japan affiliation with it, because it was in honor of the one-year anniversary of sad passing of Antonio Inoki. I didn't watch the ceremony where they had Shibata, Rocky Romero, Tony Khan, the grandsons of Antonio Inoki there. Obviously, people know about it because of that gif that's going out there, which showed Christian Cage watching the proceedings backstage. What I didn't know is apparently there's a very awkward moment where there's a big, nice frame picture of Antonio Inoki, which Tony Khan accidentally knocked over.
Oh, no, there you go, Chris Charlton. We'll have Sanada fight Antonio Inoki.
We'll resurrect him and bring him back. So, see if that would make you happy. Now, when I looked back on this, I'm like, it was a good show overall. But in terms of New Japan coverage, this wasn't exactly your forbidden door, so there wasn't as much involvement as you'd think there would be. But there was some really fucking weird matches. I just want to briefly acknowledge from the buy-in. Three out of the four, yes, four kickoff matches had New Japan guys in it, where you had the odd team of Lee Moriarty, Shane Taylor, Diamante, and Mercedes Martinez losing to the team of Athena, Billy Stark, Keith Lee, and Satoshi Kojima. And Kojima, of course, got the win with his lariat. Then we had Claudio Castagnoli fighting Josh Barnett, who has the connection to Antonio Inoki, who's a bit of a tribute there. And a fun match, which was mostly quite distracting because you were busy listening to John Moxley getting fined because he kept saying, "Yo, get him, get that bitch," or shit like that, whatever he was saying on Toronto. And then we had Bad Dude Tito, Mikey Nichols, and Shane Hayes losing an attempt to get the six-man titles from Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed.
Of course, they were never going to win that. It's Daddy Ass and the Acclaimed.
Yeah, fucking Team DK apparently can't win anything unless there's Zack Sabre Jr. But, you know, one of the proper matches on the show, in the main card, that had some New Japan influence, and they talked about how much Inoki would love it, even though the guy defending his belts is more an All Japan guy. We had Eddie Kingston defending his Ring of Honor World and his strong openweight belts against Katsuyori Shibata, who was the pure champion going into this, and they kept saying, "Oh, Shibata wants to win these two belts from Kingston. He wants to make our modern, you know, triple crown of wrestling." But unfortunately, he didn't get to do that. But it's only 11 minutes long, but Jesus, those boys beat the shit out of each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was... It seems to be a defining trait of Kingston's strong title reign so far, is that any fight with him is going to feel like an actual fight. And there is going to be some solid battering. A wee bit of the slappy meat-on-meat action.
Absolutely. And I'm glad to see he's got these two belts, because he's got a defense coming up in Las Vegas for fight experiments for the strong belt. And then obviously you'd think, as Ring of Honor champion, he'll have a big showcase at Final Battle. And December, which apparently is meant to be, they want to do it at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, which would be a big thing for him being from New York. So good for Eddie Kingston. It's nothing to do with New Japan, but I just want to acknowledge it. For me, the best match on the show by far was Swerve Strickland versus Hangman Page. I don't know for how much the crowd was into Swerve and everything, but what a match. Good on Swerve for winning that one. But of course, the match that everyone thought was going to be the main event before they decided to debut the brand new toy. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Bryan Danielson in a 22-minute match, which was absolutely beautiful techers, which sees the door firmly open for a rematch because Bryan won, but not with a technical movie. He pinned me. He hit me with a running knee like a dickhead.
Yeah, knocked him out. Absolutely. He called it a coward's move. Mm. Even Danielson's had a promo saying that he's frustrated by it, so please, 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 please give us it in the Dome.
I love that. I mean, And I'm glad that they didn't put the TV belt on the line one, because Zach's not going to win. And I think in the rematch, if Zach does win, don't put the TV belt on the line, because this match deserves a lot more than 15 minutes.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, is that Daniel, what is it, like, fucking Meltzer gave it something like 5.5 stars?
Mm-hmm. Very much deserved.
Oh, yes. Like, even your brother, who isn't exactly the biggest AEW fan or anything like that, was giving it a big round of applause.
Oh, I mean, how can you not? You have to be fucking blind to not see this as an absolute masterclass. I mean, this, it's amazing that Brian, I'm not saying that Brian Nelson didn't have matches that could be considered 5 stars when he was in WWE, even before he went to WWE. But it's amazing that he's only started getting 5 stars and up from Meltzer when he started going to AEW. It's just amazing the run he's been on, because I'm pretty sure his MJF match got 5 stars and he either won or both of the two draws that he didn't got around about that rating as well. So he's on a run of form right now, especially when he's only got a little bit of time left. Hopefully they can fit in a rematch between these two at some point. And like you said, the Dome would be the ideal place for me.
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. I mean, you'd have to be blind to miss it. You know, blind like those Muppets that do Saturday Draft Live and can't count scores, right?
Hmm. But also, I should mention, because I mentioned Collision once or twice. That's the Virginia was on commentary for Collision alongside Nigel, where they both basically took turns slagging off Bryan Danielson while he was at 8-man tag. And the best one for me was that's the Virginia going, ring, 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 ring. Can you hear that, Nigel? I can hear it. What's that? That's bloody Bryan Danielson found it in, mate.
It was such a British insult the way he done it, too.
We had also Kenosuke Takeshita, Will Ospreay, and Sammy Guevara taking on Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi. I like that Ospreay, after his match with Tsuji, acknowledged this match and alongside Sammy Guevara mentioned, like, oh, Sammy, I know we're meant to be family now, but I haven't forgotten. You hit me in the face with the bat last time I saw you. So, even that continued going. I even put my notes, what's happened to Ibushi?
Such a weird, weird situation there.
Mm-hmm. I'm sensing a running theme with these Don Callis matches, because I happened it for All In as well, and it was the only match I thought, it was really only a match I wasn't that much of a fan with when I went to see it live. Like, these Don Callis family versus Kenny Omega and friends 6-man tags that go far longer than they bloody need to. 22.5 minutes when you're 12 matches into a 14 match card when you include the pre-show. Like, come on, to fuck, lads. I mean, Jericho does it all the fucking time. He's always higher in the car than he needs to, and has to go around about 20 minutes. Like, nobody wants to see this, especially if you're watching it live in the bastard in the UK.
It's like, make it stop, make it stop.
And then we had Aussie Open being robbed, I tell you, robbed of their AEW World Tag Team titles that they were rightfully deserved. Mind you, I can't deny that off the top, but the Charlotte Machine was a thing of beauty.
Oh, yes, that was unreal.
And it makes it doubly confusing, by the way, that the Aussie Open didn't win here. I mean, Mark Davis is suddenly disappearing. Kyle Fletch has been having some bangers with, like I said, Kenny Omega. I think he's got a match coming up with, and he had a match with Bryan Danielson where he nearly killed himself on a dive. So I don't know if Davis has injured himself against me. That's why they didn't do it. But
snapped his wrist.
Oh, jeez. So that makes sense there. But then, confusingly, me and Ross, the next weekend, We had an hour, and the pre-show was about to start for Fastlane, but we said instead of watching bloody Booker T and Pete Rosenberg, or whatever his name is, talk shite, Ross had a link to watch Collision, so we started to watch the start of Collision. And we watched that there, while Ross's draft tag team of FTR got squashed by Big Bill and Ricky Starks.
Oh, I remember waking up next day and just seeing the look at the chat and be like, oh yeah, that's going to sting.
I remember sitting there and I was absolutely pissing myself laughing. He was fucking raging. Honestly, I think he was this close to going to his bloody bed.
Oh, it probably would have been the best thing he could have done, really, if he just gave up at that point, just went, no, bedtime it is. They can't get any better or worse.
You're not getting any worse. I mean, it did get worse. I did watch John Cena in that boring Earth tag match. I think Ross fell asleep watching that and I didn't bother waking him up.
No, let Grandad sleep. This isn't what we want to wake him up for.
Then we got to give special mention to Royal Quest 3. We can't go through all the matches. I just put a little opening bit here. that the fact we had some decent like interpromotional like UK talent versus the New Japan talent, like the first three opening matches, because you had the returning Taiji Ishimori, I should have mentioned earlier. Ishimori returned after the triple threat match to beat up Hiromu and get his title back after that injury. He got in a match with Hiromu back at the Super Juniors. So you made his proper in-ring return, beating Robbie X in the opener. Then you had El Desperado versus Trent Seven in the second match, and you had Yotsuji versus Luke Jacobs in the third match. So it was fun. Like, here's a top talent in the UK, or at least an up-and-coming talent in the UK, plus Trent Seven. And here's a great talent from Japan. Let's see what happens when we put them in the ring together.
Maldo just went for a second there, sorry. Yeah, but like putting them in a match together. Yes. Yeah, give us that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing, especially given that, like, getting gears on Carter when Suji was there, like, no, I'm very proud of how far he's come. I recruited him in the Legion when he was here on his excursion. Goes, only thing I'm disappointed is why did he have to go and make the decision to join LIJ? Now, I question that particular life decision.
He was not happy, and he's not letting it let him live it down.
No, he would not let him live it down. We had a rare, I didn't expect to see this, we had a War Dogs tag title defense, the junior tag titles against Cameron Kai, who's 17 years old, and Leon Slater, very love it, and average defender is only 18 years old. So, a couple of young guys, I'm kind of glad they got battered. But, you know, I heard Leon Slater doing a lot of stuff in Red Pro and in North Wrestling, and apparently he's going to be at the Newcastle show for Impact Wrestling defending his North title, so good for him.
Yeah, he's going to be one that I would not be surprised if you give it a couple of a year or so, and he'll probably start appearing in the likes of New Japan or Noah or something. He will get snapped up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cameron Kai is my first exposure to him. For me, he looks like a slightly more muscular Carmelo Hayes. He gave me that kind of vibe, and they both put in a hell of an effort. They call themselves the youngest in charge and everything. Of course, they weren't going to defeat the War Dogs, but it was a fun defense. They're basically saying that it's kind of they've got unfinished business to Slater and Maloney, so Maloney kind of taking care of some business while getting another notch in their run of defenses.
Ooh, big things.
They're coming. Of course, it seems like a weird match just to throw together on as the semi-main event because we've seen them go multiple times against each other. We had Shingo and Ishii slapping all sorts of meat in the semi-main. But the fans were all about it. I do love the fact they didn't just shout one fall. When they have a time, the guy who announced the timer, they go, time limit.
It gives us something new and different to go with.
Of course. But, I mean, what else can you say with a Shingo Ishii match other than just go fucking watch it? I mean, Shingo did come out on top, but it's hard to really describe how great this match was unless you see it for yourself.
Just never, ever sleep on. You give it a Shingo Ishii or like a Shingo Kingston or an Ishii Kingston, you're going to get yourself a big, hard, meaty slammer of a match and you will not be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. But of course, I mean, we were slightly perturbed by going into this because it felt like the recent Royal Quests have really built their shows around one or two big matches, and it felt like the match that this was built around the rightful main event. Zack Sabre Jr. challenging Willis before his IWGP UK Heavyweight Championship. And, I mean, the rest of the show was very enjoyable from an in-ring standpoint, even if only one or two matches really advanced anything. Because you had Tama challenging Shingo to another match because they had that draw at the G1. So those two are going to fight at some point for the NEVER title. But, of course, the whole show was better around this. If everything else was shit, but this match was still the same as it was, this would still be a show worth watching.
Oh yeah, that's it. Osprey and Sabre, when are you ever going to get a bad match there? The answer, never.
I know, we talked about the consistency of Sabre for the last month and also the consistency of purpose all year of Will Osprey, so you know it was going to get some sort of magic here. I haven't seen the star ratings, but I imagine they'll be very, very high for these two. And the fact that there's like so many moments like Osprey trying to go back, fight with Zach strike-wise and technically, and you know, Sabre trying to ground Osprey to take out his arm, but then there was moments where Zach went to the top and did some sort of flipping into the arm bar from the top rope. The speed at which he went from the apron into the ring and up to the top to grab Osprey, I'm like, I had to rewind it because my eyes couldn't process it the first time he moved that fast.
Oh, it's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, 30 minutes Plus, I think it went, and it did not feel like it dried at any point. Yeah, the UE and Osprey's corner, but finally, after multiple hidden blades and a Stormbreaker, they didn't have to resort to the Storm Driver. Had the Stormbreaker, Osprey pinned Zach, and it's the ultimate sign of respect from Zach. He gave him a kiss on the forehead.
That's it, a wee peck. A wee loving peck.
And then Osprey picked up a sign that someone brought in the crowd, which says, attendance, 81,000. And he just laughed like, hey, they're the ones who fucking announced it. And then he called the guy who brought it a cunt.
As you do.
Yeah. And he thanked Zach. He said to me, like, he slid them for liking tofu. Like, he's always going on about tofu, like, vegan this, save the planet that, fuck the Tories. I mean, I agree with that one. And people started chanting, fuck the Tories. And then he called Rio Khan a sexy beast, which, you know, no lies detected there. And he said, is there any sexy Japanese bitches that want to challenge me for this belt? Because, you know, if you're a champion, you're supposed to go around the world defending it, especially if you're a world champion. But then out came Shota Umino, which Osprey wasn't pleased by, because, you know, he's beaten him 3 times, as he mentioned. And Osprey keeps talking, and once Shota's microphone actually works, Shota comes out with, shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker.
Cue South Park references.
Yeah, I did not think there would be a South Park reference in the end of a New Japan show, especially not one in the UK. And then Osprey said, like, he was almost going to break into song, singing it, going, where did you learn, shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker? And he just went, from John Moxley.
Gosh, who else would teach him this language other than heavily fined AEW commentator John Moxley?
Just from repeating that segment and the C words and the F words that Osprey repeated there, and I think we've already swore already in this show, apparently getting the explicit banner on your podcast doesn't actually take that many Fs, let alone it dropping the cunt word in the middle of the podcast. So I think already this is a podcast that should take, apparently if we want to be accurate describing this podcast, we need to give an explicit banner, which I think is a first feed sleep suplex retreat.
Oh yeah.
And of course it's going to happen here, the one that barely anyone else on the podcast pays attention to, but fuck it, we've already said it. So obviously Shota wants to have the match with him. He said bring both the IWGP UK and heavy and US championships. He wants to see both of them. And Osprey only agreed to if Great O'Khan could get the match he wanted, which was against John Moxley.
And it's official. It's fucking official.
Oh yes, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. I did not expect it to happen, but well, it's gonna happen. And not just that, I mean Osprey did the big send off and everything. He goes backstage to do his backstage comments. He set up the things with Shota and everything. What happens? He gets attacked and fucking choked out by Gabriel Kidd.
Of course. Of course it's going to be Gabriel Kidd.
I don't know. That seems random. But really, if you want to do this, flip this around. Like, do Gabriel Kidd first, then fight Shota. Because if anything, I think Shota might be a candidate to actually take the belt off Osprey if he's going to leave soon. Because like, everyone's seemingly predicting that Osprey's these days are numbered with New Japan, even though he's teasing the stuff with Sanada, which makes me think, like, once he loses the IWGP UK belt, he should go after the world belt after the Tokyo Dome, maybe, for one last run. But everyone else seems to be predicting that he's leaving, so I would actually send the Shota match for the Tokyo Dome, because putting over one of the Musketeers on his way, it might be a good send-off for Osprey.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would make total sense in every way. It would be absolutely fantastic.
But let's get ahead to a couple of the big cards that are coming up and a little tournament that's coming. We've already been here for over an hour, maybe close to an hour and 10 minutes here. So let's run through some of these matches and get the hell out of here. But we've got Fighting Spirit Unleashed at Samstown Casino in Las Vegas. And initially I was a bit hesitant saying, oh, this looks like a better card than Buddy Royal Quest, because there were seemingly more title matches, more implications on this card. And might not end up being a better card, but on paper it looks solid. So what we got confirmed is we got Yuya Uemura and Sanada against Hiromu and Naito. We got, in their first defense, the IWGP, the NGPW Strong tag team titles. Hikaru and AOP will defend against Monster Sauce, Alex Zane and Lance Archer. Which I don't know if you saw, Grant, but in their backstage comments after winning, They were sent some mild, which ELP didn't like, Taco Bell sauce, and some zero sugar Monster Energies, which ELP was also unhappy about, which was meant to symbolise Monster sauce.
Yeah, nice cryptic promotional material by New Japan. Fantastic.
We have a four-way match to determine the number one contender for the Strong Openweight Championship. We have Satoshi Kojima versus Fred Ross versus Alex Coughlin versus Jeff Cobb. We have Gabriel Kidd versus Tom Lawlor, which should be fun. Julia, in her fifth defense of the Strong Women's Championship, takes on Hayan. We'll have what I originally thought was going to be the main event, but before another match got announced, Eddie Kingston versus Hanare for the Strong Openweight Championship. We have a tag team match of CMLL wrestlers wrestling on the card. But if I'm not mistaken, the never open weight title match between Shingo and Tama has actually been announced to take place in Samstown. So I have actually a feeling that that might be an event over the Kingston match because, well, I think in terms of in Japan, those two are the two bigger stars.
Yeah. I think you could be on in with a shout there because they have added that match to the card. You are correct. So it would, on paper, it would be the one that makes most sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very interesting card. Finally getting to see Buddy Kingston versus Hanare. I see them bear each other. It's actually the fourth defense of Kingston's Strong Openweight belt. I used to see Julia finally. She's defended the belt before, but I haven't actually seen a lot of her defenses. I haven't been able to watch them, so nice to get to see her again. But outside of all the title matches or the ones with title implications, which should be fun, seeing Gabriel Kidd fight Tom Lawlor is going to be very violent, but I'm sure I'm going to enjoy that one.
Yeah, that's a match that I think is going to exceed expectations.
And then looking at Power Struggle on the 4th of November in Osaka, obviously we're going to have the finals of the Super Junior Tag League, the winners of that tournament, if it's not the champions, getting to fight the champions at the Tokyo Dome for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag titles, or in that tournament in a minute. But anyway, the finals of that at the show. We're also going to have what I assume will be the main event of Show Terminal challenging Will Ospreay and his third defence. We have Guru Khan v John Moxley, which has been confirmed. The random match of Tangalo v David Finlay being announced, which I think poor Tanga is going to get battered so that David Finlay can send a message to his brother. Yuya Uemura and Sanada versus Yota Tsuji and Tetsuya Naito. TMDK have been put up in another title match where we've got Zack, Mickey Nichols and Shane Hayes taking on Okada, Tanahashi and Ishii for the six-man titles. And a match that, if it's not the Ospreay one, then maybe this will be the main event. Taiji Ishimori will get his rematch for the title that he wasn't pinned to lose against Hiromu Takahashi for the junior heavyweight title. Honestly, I initially thought they won't do him that much on Power Struggle because they're really just building to the Dome when I get to these next two tournaments. I was very wrong about Power Struggle, clearly.
We made a mistake. We were wrong.
I was so wrong. But before we get to the tournament, I'm assuming that the match you're really looking in, I assume the match that you're most looking forward to is clearly the Great Okan versus John Moxley.
Oh, without a doubt, that is actually going to be exciting.
Oh yeah, I do love that they like bringing John Moxley out every so often just to create a bit of buzz. Like, oh, John Moxley's back in Japan. Like, they've even got a show in December in Texas called Lone Star Show, which they confirmed that Moxley's going to be at. And the other big thing they're advertising for that Lone Star Show is that Mayu Iwatani will be there defending her IWGP Women's title.
It could work. He says with great confidence.
Yeah, maybe. Now, we get to the Super Junior Tag League. We have 10 teams confirmed. It seems going to be just a one-block format with 10 teams, everyone facing each other just once. Of course, in the tournament, we've got the tag team champions, Drellin Maloney and Clark Connors. We have the Ichiban Sweet Boys, which they're being billed as, of Robbie Eagles and Kosei Fujita. They're back from Australia. Catch 2-2, teaming together, obviously. Bushi and Titan. They brought Titan back out of the cupboard for a tournament. The unique team, the original odd couple of Desperado and Master Watto, Kanemaru teaming with Sho. It'll be nice to see Sho team with someone that isn't Dick Togo in a junior environment. DKC teaming with Ryusuke Taguchi. The International Intergalactic Jet Setters, Kushida and Kevin Knight. The team that my heart is really rooting for. Takevichi Inoku and Doki, just representing just five guys. Go on, boys. And then they were advertising X teaming with Yo, so Yo had a mystery partner. And then apparently Sho went to Michinoku Pro, which people forgot was even still around. Masai, I believe is, I hope I'm pronouncing it properly, will be his tag team partner for this tournament. A weird decision, but fair enough. I was surprised that Michinoku Pro was still going. Hell, half the time when anyone mentions something happened to All Japan, I'm like, why are we talking about All Japan? What is this, the 90s?
We've taken a step back in time.
But other than maybe some of the top teams that you would expect, like your Catch 2-2s and your LIG, it's a very unique lineup there.
It definitely is. It's a lot of unpredictable factors in amongst this field. And with it being the round robin one shot each, anything can happen with this.
Absolutely. I think maybe the case of they don't have as many junior teams as the heavyweight teams, but I was hopeful that given that World Tag won't be competing with any other tournaments this year, that they were going to do a two-block format for that, and I hope that World Tag League doesn't do the one-block format like they're doing. But I can understand it for Super Junior Tag League because they've only got the whole of the tour up to Power Struggle from the 21st of October right up until just before November 4th. So you don't have it. I don't think that would be enough time to do two full blocks.
No, it's very, very tight for time, but we shall see what weird stuff they pull off.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, I think the champions, as I said before, will have a very dominant performance through the tournament, but I said to you that I think my head says Catch 2-2 when they set up their rematch at the Tokyo and get the revenge against Maloney for betraying them, but my heart will always root for Doki and Taka.
That's it. Doki and Taka in my heart. Desperado and Watt was the other team that I'm kind of backing as well, because I love that oddball pairing.
I'm sure someone else has done it before, but that would put Watt in a very unique club if he did win it, which means he would have won the best of Super Juniors and Super Junior Tag League in the same year, which I'm sure someone else has done before, but probably been a long time since that's happened.
Yeah, that's... I think, yeah, that's one to do some Chris Charlton level digging into to find out.
Yeah, look, get him on the blower. Get him on. Chris, put your finger out, come on. So we got that. Also, you got the unpredictability of you and his partner. Get to see Kosuke Fujita, see if he's developed while he's been away in Australia, get to show off some more of his tickers in this tournament.
tickers.
And that's what we got to look forward to. Obviously, next time we come to you, we're probably going to be somewhere in mid-November trying to get this to you before World Tag League. I don't know when exactly they're going to start World Tag League. I see if they've got that announced somewhere on their website, but maybe it won't be as much as we've just talked about there, but we have... Actually, sorry, I tell a lie about that. It's on the 10th of November, not December. But yeah, Moxley and Mayu Iwatani will both be on that card. But probably as much as we've been talking about here, but you know, well, the next time we come to you, we'll be talking about the junior tag tournament, Power Struggle, and Ace Burnley. So I'm sure they'll cram a lot in there, especially with a tournament in there, and we'll see if they made the right decision with the winner. Before I talk about something else that's coming up, do you have any particular matchups? Because even that everyone's going to fight each other once, do you have any particular matchups you're looking forward to at that Super Junior Tag League lineup?
I think one that I'd say that I'm looking forward to would be Desperado and Watto against the War Dogs. I think that's going to be a particularly hard hitting affair.
So now I'm looking forward to seeing Yo and his partner against, because I keep forgetting his name already, taking on Sho and Kanemaru, and to see those two mix up again. Yo being like, look, don't need you, you've got your new pal, look at my new pal, he's from a whole different promotion.
One that you probably forgot existed. Wild card, bitches.
And also War Dog probably against Katsu too, getting to see those guys mix it up again after what happened in the last time they met. But looking ahead here, obviously, next time we come, also we talk about the tournament, as I said, Power Struggle and Fight Spirit Unleashed, but we'll also hopefully be previewing World Tag League if they've announced the participants and by the time we record. But since we're going to have plenty of time to get those recordings done because 4th of November is Power Struggle, World Tag League doesn't start off until Monday the 20th of November, and it will run all the way until the 10th of December.
Not too long at all.
So I'm wondering if they will fit a two-block format in there somewhere, and then obviously after that it'll be a couple of Road 2 shows, and then we'll be on our way to the biggest show, the best night of the year, obviously Wrestle Kingdom 18.
The big one is upon us.
So it's like a kid on Christmas. I'm like, it's so close, I can feel it. Feel it in my bones. we are coming up almost an hour 25 here. It's been a hell of a show, right? A lot of us to cover, and I think we did our best. And we can't give everything equal time, but we tried.
We tried, but we only have so much time. People only have so much time, and New Japan just seem hell bent and absolutely ramming every second.
Absolutely, and I look forward to talking about this Super Junior tournament. I look forward to looking ahead to World Tag, and I especially look forward to all this talk about Wrestle Kingdom and where things are going to go leading into the big show, and some speculation about the big matches that are coming up. What do you guys think? What were some of your favorite matches in the last month in New Japan? What are you looking forward to? The Super Junior Tag. What are you looking forward to about leads up to Wrestle Kingdom? What do you think some of the big matches are going to be? Do let us know at SuperTweet, at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. All the best places you can find us on social media. Get us on all good Android podcasting sites, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean. Where did you get our podcast? May we care with a like, rating, or review on your chosen platform. But until last time, that has been Graham Early. I've been Scott McLeod. I've been talking for too long. I need to lie down. Bye-bye.
'Hello, I am the GOAT David Campbell, and I am pleased, very pleased to announce, in fact, that our next career profile show, our next feature show, will be on Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper. It'll be coming to wherever you get your podcasts on October 29th. We're going to talk about the first WrestleMania, his importance to that. We're going to talk about his legendary match with Bret Hart. We'll even talk about his WCW run. We'll cover it all, folks, and you can check it out here on Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet.
Podcast Network.